Today's first reading is from the second letter to the Corinthians. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us again. On him we have set our hope that he will continue to deliver us. Our second reading is from Isaiah. A shoot will come out from the stump of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. On that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a signal to the peoples. The nations will seek him out, and his dwelling will be glorious. On that day, the Lord will extend his hand a second time. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Imagination is a powerful thing. Imagination can change reality. Imagination is what led to the 1946 Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life, directed by Frank Capra. You know, it's a wonder it ever became a movie at all. It began in 1939 as a little short story written by Philip Stern, but he couldn't get it published. So he sent it out as a Christmas card to 200 friends. Can you imagine? Well, a producer from RKO Productions came across it and said, I'm gonna make this into a movie for Cary Grant. So he started working on scripts, but they couldn't come to an agreement, so they scrapped the whole project. That's when Frank Capra came across it. And he saw that it had a message people needed to hear. People who have been discouraged. People who have lost hope. People who have given up. So he bought the rights, made it into a movie, and released it in 1946 to very mixed reviews. People did not flock to the box office, as you might expect. It only rose to number 26 for the year. Critics panned it as well, saying it had too much imagination, not enough reality. But Frank Capra still believed in it, and he continued to say, this is the favorite movie I've ever made in my life. Decades later, people rediscovered it. In 2006, the American Film Institute named it the number one most inspirational movie of all time. Sometimes it takes a while to see what can be. Imagination. Imagine that you are a part of the story. I know it sounds silly, but just for a minute, let's imagine. What if you were a resident of Bedford Falls? What would that do to change your perspective on your story or on God's story? Let's just imagine.
So you still think killing yourself would make everyone feel happier, eh?
Oh, I don't know. I guess you're right. I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
You've got your wish. You've never been born.
You don't have to make all that fuss about it.
Get me back! I don't care what happens to me! Get me back to my wife and kids! Help me, Clarence, please! Please! I want to live again! I want to live again! I want to live again! Please, God, let me live again! Have you seen my wife?
Mary Ann!
Daddy!
Daddy!
Kids! Pete! Eat you up.
George! George,
Mary.
Darling!
Mary. Mary!
George, darling! Where are you?
Oh, George! Oh,
Mary. George! George! George!
Oh,
George!
Oh, George! Are you real?
George.
Well, you have no idea what's happened to me.
You have no idea what happened.
Folks doing today. Suppose by now you kind of figured out I'm him, you know, that guy, George Bailey. No. Well, why are you looking at me like that for? Haven't you ever seen a guy step out of a movie? Now you'd probably look and sound a lot different too 70 years later. You know, it was that long since then, 70 years. People know me from that chapter of my life. Yeah, they know the George Bailey who grew up in Bedford Falls. They know about my family and my old broken down house that we built up. They know about the Bailey Savings and Loan, our grand family business, and how Uncle Billy tried to make that deposit and lost the money and nearly cost us our whole business, and I got so discouraged I wanted to take my life. I had this experience. This angel gave me the chance to see my life as if I'd never been born. That's a terrific gift, you know. People know that story. They know how that part of my life ended. We're standing around the Christmas tree singing with my family and the whole town in my living room, and life's just happily ever after that. Yeah, that's a story people know, but let me ask you something. You ever tried to live happy ever after? It's kind of a high bar if you ask me. Pretty tall order to live happily ever after. I think that's the problem with a lot of people. They try to go through life living happily ever after, and if something goes wrong, it's kind of like they got the wrong script or things got messed up and they're waiting for the director to get it figured out so they can go on with life, so they can be happily ever after. Well, I'm here to tell you, life doesn't work that way. Yeah, like the rest of my story. You know, after that Christmas, we kind of figured out with Uncle Billy what happened to the $8,000. He finally remembered that the last time he saw the deposit was standing in Potter's office. A few days later, someone came into the savings and loan. They ran the bank that day, and after Uncle Billy left, they saw Potter walk out of his office with this envelope holding lots of cash in it. Well, we knew what happened then, so we pressed charges to get the money back from Potter. You know what he did? He got all lawyered up and brought in these high-powered attorneys from some city like Indianapolis or somewhere. And he countersued. Can you believe that? Why, all the nerve. He sued me for defamation of character. God, goodness sakes, after stealing money from us, and he had the nerve to go and love of Pete. Ah, you saw the movie. You know how it goes. Well, we couldn't afford an attorney. I had to represent myself. You can ask, how'd that turn out? Goodness gracious, I thought Bedford Falls was a quiet place. Let's try that again. You can ask, how did that turn out? Well, none too good, let me tell you. In my case, it got kicked out of court. And they awarded Potter $50,000 in damages because of how I sullied his reputation questioning his conduct. Goodness sakes, we couldn't come up with $50,000. Sam Wainwright didn't even have that much money anymore. The people in the town felt like they bailed me out one time. They couldn't afford to do that again. We lost the savings and loan. Potter got it after all. Not only that, I was out of a job. That meant I had to sell the house. You can imagine how that went over with Mary. Yeah, let me tell you what, guys, a woman will stand by her man until you go sell her dream house and see how long she stands there then. Mary filed for divorce and took the kids. She ended up marrying Sam Wainwright after all. I think they live in Europe or somewhere now. Uncle Billy, he never got over the tongue lashing I gave him that night he lost the money. He just sort of secluded himself in that house with that dumb squirrel running all over the place. He kind of fell off his rocker. And my brother, Harry, I tried to convince Harry when he got out of the Army he needs to move back home and help me get the family business back. He had no intent on doing that. I said, look, young man, I lost my hearing to save you out of that frozen lake. The least you can do is come back and help me. He said, I don't want to live in Bedford Falls anymore. I said, well, if you don't want to come back now, don't ever come back. And he didn't. It's the last time we talked. If you hadn't figured it out by now, life hasn't exactly been happy ever after for old George Bailey. I don't know why I'm telling you all this today. You know, I know this is all kind of odd to you. It's odd to me. I don't know why your pastor isn't here preaching a sermon right now. I mean, you're a church after all, aren't you? Shouldn't you have a sermon at Christmas time? Goodness sakes. I understand that. I understand what it's like to want to hear a message of hope. That's what changed my life. When I was sitting in a church pew just like you're sitting there right now, and I heard a sermon turn my life around. I guess that's why they asked me to come and share today. So you listen to me this long, you might as well listen to me for a few more minutes, huh? If you don't want to do that, read a book or something. There's a pretty good one in the pew where you're sitting there. Well, after all that, I had to move to Chicago. Couldn't stay in Bedford Falls anymore. I just wanted to get away. I wanted to get where people didn't know me anymore. Folks didn't recognize me as George Bailey, the failure. You ever wanted to do that? You ever wanted to just get up and leave? Where you can be anonymous? Where you can try to find a fresh start? Just begin life all over again. That's what I wanted to do. That was harder than I thought. Go to Chicago, I couldn't find a job. The best I could get was an assistant bank clerk. Barely made enough money to afford a one-room apartment. Started thinking about that job Potter offered me years ago. Wish I'd have taken that. Started thinking a lot about Bedford Falls. Thought about all the people who weren't in my life anymore, my family, my friends, business associates, clients I would run into in the store, and I knew their families, and I could ask about their children, and just felt like I didn't have a home anymore, almost like I didn't even exist. One Christmas Eve, I was walking down the street in Chicago, and I went past this church, and they were having service inside. I thought it'd been a long time since I'd been in church, and I kind of missed that. So I snuck in the back, and I went to the very back pew and found a seat in the corner. Church was lit by candles and Christmas lights. Children's choir was singing. I sat down, and I started to think about that Christmas Eve. I prayed that prayer on the bridge. All of a sudden, I was interrupted by the applause as the children's choir finished and the pastor got up in the pulpit to preach. It was a woman pastor. We never had women pastors in Bedford Falls. I've never seen anything like that before. Well, this woman got up and she said, some of you here tonight, you're thinking about Christmases of long ago. You're wishing you could go back in time and be there again. Some of you here tonight are wondering if you still believe in Christmas. I thought, how is she reading my mind right now? How does she know? And what she said next nearly made me fall out of the pew. She said, tonight I want you to imagine that there had never been a Christmas. Imagine if Jesus had never been born, she said. Well, that was a question that changed my life. Imagine if I'd never been born. She said, for one thing, we wouldn't be sitting here right now. There wouldn't be a church. There wouldn't be Christmas. She said, just think of all of the missionaries and the churches through history that have started hospitals and clinics and schools all over the world. They wouldn't be here. She said, Abraham Lincoln would have probably never worked to abolish slavery because he wouldn't have grown up in a church that shaped and influenced his thinking. Susan Anthony would have probably never fought for women's rights because there wouldn't have been that Quaker church that taught her as a little girl women are equal to men. Martin Luther King would have probably never led the civil rights movement had there never been a Christmas. And then she asked, how different would your life be had there never been Christmas? How many influences would be missing in your life because of people who passed on the love of Christ, God's grace and God's mercy, people who were there in your life to help you when you needed it the most? What if you never had any of that? How different would life be? Then she started talking about something I'd never heard a pastor talk about. She started talking about the stump of Jesse. I'd heard that expression. I had no idea what it meant. When your pastor gets back, tell him you want to hear him preach a sermon on the stump of Jesse sometime. It'll probably leave him stumped, I bet. She explained, Jesse was the father of King David. And there was this belief at the time that the Messiah would one day be a product of that lineage. That one day the Messiah would be a descendant of David's family, would come from Jesse. But over time, things happened that made people give up on that hope. Things happened that made people believe God's promise would never come about, and it made them feel like a stump. She said, a stump is what's left of life when your hope gets cut down. When it doesn't look like the things you hoped in are going to come about. Have you ever felt like a stump, she asked. And then she said, but you know, stumps do a funny thing. Stumps often put out little shoots of life. Little sprigs that start to grow out that let you know that stump isn't dead. It's still alive. She said, that's how God is. God is like that sprig of hope that lets us know hope never dies. She said, you can't kill hope. Sometimes we get all discouraged because we put all our hope in this one thing, the way that we wanted life to look. The things we hope would turn out in life. The things that we saw ourselves doing one day, just everything that we wanted to have happen in our lives. And when that doesn't happen, because that one hope doesn't come about, we start to question, is there any hope at all? It's as if there never was a Christmas. She said, but Christmas is like that sprig, reminding us that while God might not give us back all the things that we're looking for, it doesn't stop God from working. And that sprig of hope is a fragile thing. It's as fragile as an infant baby. It just means we have to look for what God is doing. And stop waiting on God to give us the hope that we want. And when we can do that, we can discover what hope is all about. And this is when I knew she was talking to me. She looked right in the back of the church where I was sitting, and she said, the most important hope to find is the hope that's been lost. The hope that you used to have when you were confident that God was going to fulfill some promise that you just knew God was real. But life had a way of wiping that away, just like cutting down a tree. And when you can hope again, hope in what God can do, some new thing, some new possibility. She said, that's what hope is all about. Before you get all the answers to prayer, before you even have a reason to hope, she said, that's real hope. Just choosing to believe that you can't kill hope. With God, there are all kinds of possibilities. Next thing I knew, we were singing Silent Night, holding our candles up in the air, and that's when it happened. All of a sudden, I became so aware of God's presence, it was as real to me as the candle in my hand. I just knew that God was right there in that room with us. I can't explain it any better than that. I wish I could. I wish I had more evidence to give you. But for me, I just knew that I could walk out of that church that night into the dark, cold air without anything in my life being any different. I didn't have the whole town standing there waiting to greet George Bailey. I didn't have the family there kissing me on the cheek. I didn't have somebody there giving me a better job. But I had something inside of me that could face that. I could keep going. I could keep living. Because I had the sprig of hope inside my soul. I rediscovered Christmas. I guess that's why they asked me to come and talk to you this morning. I'm still trying to figure it all out. Still trying to understand why God does some of the things God does, or doesn't do some of the things you wish he would. But I know he still brings hope. You can't kill hope. It's like a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Never thought of that before.